The title today is Confidence in What Is. And it's partly about experiencing yourself, experiencing ourselves, experiencing what is. We could say like from the bottom up instead of from the top down. So that it's almost like an inversion, a turnaround from our usual way of thinking of here I am up here and maybe my true nature is down there somewhere and I've got to connect to it or make myself good enough to deserve it or whatever. To being the true nature that happens to have a, if the individual is up there, so I'm here and the individual is also allowed. And confidence in what is also about if we are all of that, and not only what we think, if we are all of that, then it really is a revolution in how we can live in specific situations. So there's a tendency to go along and there are difficult situations and nice situations. And when there are difficult situations, we easily get into a kind of bargaining. Like, I'll do my best and try hard and be good. Or I'll get to a pressure cooker point and lose it, freak out. But I'm doing my best and trying to get it right. As a kind of bargain with the difficulty. As if I could earn my way out of the difficult. And it might not sound very different, but it's such a very different way to be in a difficult situation, which there will be difficult situations. But to be in a difficult situation, accepting this is difficult, with this confidence that I'm not only what I think, so that this situation, even if I wouldn't wish it on me or anyone else, in this situation, I can help freedom come through in a way I hadn't planned on. So it's partly difficult because it's not what I planned. I planned on getting peaceful or whatever. And I see myself not peaceful. And it's hard to let go of, it's hard to lose my self-image as getting peaceful. So am I willing to let life situations of all kinds, difficult and not difficult, generous and tight, to help free me in ways I hadn't expected. So a small kind of general example from my own life in the last year and a half or so, a lot of things have gone wrong, like they've gone away from what I thought I was going. And one example that some of you were present with me, in January 2011, yeah, so just over a year ago, I came with Gyan to India for 1 month. Gyan is my son, to do a couple of retreats. And he was so freaked out that I could hardly get out of the room, much less to the meditation hall. So we'd come all this way, all the childcare had fallen through, and I was just in this dark room, and Gyan didn't even want to go and see the special cow next door, who hadn't stood up for like 4 weeks or 4 months or something like that. Would normally be very exciting for him. It was a difficult situation to have had friends come to meet. And if we could meet at all, we would meet while watching Sesame Street on my laptop. We would have really intimate interviews with C is for Cookie and It's Good Enough for Me being sung. And I hope it doesn't ever happen again, and I hope something like that doesn't happen to you, but these things happen. And it helped me come into a more willingness not just to kind of think how good it would be to live on the edge of the unknown, but to really not know if I would be able to go and give the Dharma talk. And so we would try to schedule the day, okay, I'll do this meditation and you'll do that meditation. And sometimes 30 seconds before, maybe Gyan would fall asleep and I could get to the hall and then he would wake up and I'd have to come back because he was in such a state. So feelings of helplessness, etc., when we can't make the difficult situation get good. And then what it reveals in us about what were expectations from others and myself that we weren't even aware of. That I come to a retreat with Jaya and she might give one guided meditation in 10 days. That I come to teach a retreat all the way from Spain and I might be able to go to the meditation hall. Or not. And so I thought, well, this is a time period that I can handle really and enjoy, really like to wipe away so many knowns. And then I realized that I had this assumption that I would live on that edge for maybe a few months and then things would fall into place again. And what has happened is partly things haven't fallen into place, and partly I really like this openness. In my deep and long-term friendships, I really like the feeling that we're not bound to each other in any way. And what it does is it brings me back to a place of feeling how we each love for the other to fly. So just to give a kind of simple example. Jack Kornfield talks about moving down the chakras as a kind of joke, kind of not. He's one of the more well-known Vipassana teachers in the United States. And he noticed that once we have this system of these different chakras in mind and how we're supposed to come up, so then we try to start at the top. And our version of the top is very mental. And we do our best with what we have. And then after a while, we ourselves get bored and tired of that version of the top. And we start to fall down. And so he talks about coming from the head to the heart. In his case, it was a typical movement that some people have, like going into a monastery to leave the world behind, leave relationships behind, and just be for the truth. But then he realized that that was partly an excuse to avoid things that were needing some love and care in his being. So he came out of the monastery, disrobed, and got married. It's a very common story. It's not that he was wrong to be a monk, and it's not that he was wrong to get married or right to get married or whatever. And then he talks about coming down again from the heart to the body, where we thought we were practicing mindfulness of body, and then we realized we still don't really know where we are, where our body is, and what it is. Because we thought it was so far down that it was below us. In Open Dharma, we kind of talk about it in a little bit different way, where the body could be experienced from the head, from the heart, and from the belly. The emotional realm and relational realm could be experienced from the head, from the heart, from the belly. And even ideas about spirituality or anything else, whatever belongs to the realm of the head, can be experienced head, heart, belly. And then the spiritual truths that we had related to as ideas before can be experienced head, heart, belly. Someone is lending me this book, so while I have it, it's called Blue Iris, Poems and Essays by Mary Oliver. While I have it, I take the chance to give you a sweet line. So I'm partly going to just tell the story to you because the English is too difficult to read and translate. But she starts by calling the poem or the piece The Roses. And she starts by saying, "All afternoon, I have been walking over the dunes." So the dunes are the hills and even mountains of sand by the sea. She lives by the sea. And she describes herself as hurrying from one kind of bunch of wild sort of desert roses to another. Some are red, some are white, some are both. And she's running and smelling, or at least she's leaning down into them, close to their dark or pale petals, red as blood or white as snow. "And now I am beginning to breathe slowly and evenly." And then it's a surprising image. "I'm beginning to breathe slowly and evenly, the way a hunted animal breathes, finally, when it has galloped and galloped, when it is wrung dry, like we would take all the water out of a cloth or a sponge. But at last is far away, so the panic begins to drain from the chest, from the wonderful legs, and the exhausted mind." But this curious image where she's running to the flowers, but then she's saying it's like a hunted animal that's run and run and run and finally is exhausted and is away. And the panic drains down. And then she says, or it happens in her, "Oh, sweetness, pure and simple, may I join you? I lie down next to them on the sand. But to tell about what happens next, I truly need help. Will somebody or something please start to sing?" Yesterday, we spoke about how we can't talk about what is. We can't talk about what is between, and how we talk about it anyway, etc., etc. Good. Gangaji says, "At some point, a maturity arises where we cease imagining we can find ourselves in any mental understanding or thoughts." And we could add, where we cease to run to find any experience of ourselves in any emotion or energy or perception. That maturity arises. And so we let things flow through, kind of roll off of us in a different way. And it's okay that things can't be talked about, things that are most important. There's a knowing that it can be experienced somehow. What doesn't need our controlling or our attending to be? And I love this way of talking about head, heart, and belly. Not only for experiencing what is and what we truly are, but also for letting life situations help free us in ways we hadn't planned. For getting to the point and for letting the point keep coming through. So letting the head realm become more soft. And so that's why when people have come to interviews or asked in the hall, but when I lie down, maybe for a while there's some crispness and then I fall asleep and I daydream and I don't even know if I'm asleep or awake. And we say, great. Keep going. Don't take it as a final point, but don't stop letting that happen. Leaving space for another kind of crispness. And we let the heart, so the realm of the, not just emotions, but we can call it the conditioned heart, the reactions, the emotional charge. What often we need here is not so much attention to what goes on, but just a little bit more tone, like muscle tone kind of thing. A little bit more tone. So that we're not always attending to emotion. When I speak about emotion, some of you will think, oh yes, I'm emotional, I know what you mean. And some of you will think, oh, I'm not emotional, that's for those emotional types. But just look more closely. There's usually, even in a very seemingly logical mental person, an emotion in charge of the mental situation. So it's partly to be able to let emotion happen without needing to attend to it. And it's also, and it's almost nearly the same thing, to be able to meet an emotion right to the core, unafraid. So that's what I mean by tone. It's not a big deal that any emotion can come. And it's also a big deal in the sense that meeting it without freaking out allows a breakthrough to something more important than that emotion that's reactive from past experience. So we start to have an openness to something that's unrelated to any past experience. One trick here, if you remember sometimes that some kind of revelation happened, and not only in your system, but consciously you had a revelation, you realized something, and there was a thought with it, you realized, oh my God, all my life I have been blind to such and such, or reacting in such and such a way, which is the same. And for most of us, the next thought will be, how could I be so stupid? How could I have not seen it before? How could I be such and such number of years old and never noticed? And so our unopenness to something that's not coming out of the past, that doesn't relate neatly to what we already know. So if we could not be insulted by our revelations, if we can let it start to make available and make us available to a quiet joy when our system wakes up in that way. As our system wakes up, sometimes there can be an overwhelming care, overwhelming sensitivity we've talked about, but if we let that sensitivity be what it really is, which is care, not careful, closer to careless than careful. Where there starts to be more and more freedom to feel that there is, since there is not a right and wrong that's preset, predetermined outside of a situation, before a situation. As there starts to be more and more confidence that as our situation happens, a knowing and an acting that are in harmony with that situation, that can bring out the best in the situation, come with the situation. So there's less and less like a preset right and wrong that we're trying to get things to go towards the right. There's more of a feeling of it doesn't really matter so much. But then, if I have in mind that it doesn't matter, and I have in feeling the sensitivity and care, the sensitivity and care will start to be, again, just more and more sensitivity and disconnected from caring. If I let sensitivity and care be one thing, and the confidence that within what is in any situation, there's the possibility of bringing out the best, bringing out what's most transformative. Then we can honestly feel that it does make a difference how our response acts. So without getting tense and too careful, without going back up to the head, we can actually, in a feeling way, without overwhelming us, we can feel that every gesture makes a difference. As always, I'm speaking about inner and outer gestures at the same time. The gesture of not picking up the tired old emotion. Sometimes when it's a learning process, we notice that just the turning of our head had an effect. The lifting of a finger had an effect. The not lifting of the finger had an effect. It's when we are really called to sink into what is, because it's more than we could handle as just me. It's more than we could process in the ways that we process. So if we can allow the sensitivity to rest back into the lap of what it is, which is care. It's kind of like a deeper version of coming out of the busy head into the conditioned heart, but in a more subtle, deep, important way. Letting the sensitivity, the awareness of our vulnerability, rest back into the lap of its real mother, which is caring. So that it's fun to care in every gesture, that it can be playful. When it's not playful, and when the sensitivity and caring are dislocated, then we will be that hunted animal that's running and trying to find an escape and a comfort. Where again, we're bargaining with situations. We want to kind of get paid back for working so hard. So we want to have some guarantee. I'm working hard, but I'm going to get it, right? And luckily, eventually we do get tired, just like a hunted animal gets tired. And usually the hunted animal also gets away. I'm starting to have this realization that more often than not, the hunted animal gets away. More often than not, the boa constrictor isn't hungry. They only eat like once a year, maybe twice.
Can I give you a short example?
Please.
This is one I really like out of evolutionary theory. It's like we are...
If you just speak a little loudly and slowly so they can hear you.
It's like one of my most favorite example out of evolutionary theory that we are the ancestors of runaways. We're basically not the ancestors of those who were facing the...
Do you mean the descendants?
Yeah. They were the descendants.
Our ancestors.
The descendants of those who were fighting the sable sand tiger in a fist fight, who were basically those who were smarter to run away before he approached.
Could you hear? So our ancestors, do you want to say it again?
Evolutionary, it makes sense to run away from the tiger. And not fighting him. So this is kind of a theory, but one I really like. So.
And then we could also take this further into what I'm talking about in one other way, which is on the occasion that we had no other choice but to fight the saber-toothed tiger, completely unarmed, with maybe a club, but I mean the saber-toothed tiger. With any life situation is not a guarantee that we will win or survive, but there are two different kinds of way out. And they're both more available when we're not freaking out. There's often a way out of an impossible situation. If we're developing that strength and calmness and playfulness that is happening here by resting, for example, then something might come through, whatever it is. Like throw the club and maybe the cat will follow the club. Something illogical might work for survival. And the other is we might not survive. So if we could not survive, kind of like without feeling betrayed by life, we can die without thinking that's the end. Are there any other comments or questions so far? Lorna, then Lenny. Right. I'm tempted to say two contradictory answers. And one is that, of course, it's not always any one thing that's the best. And yes, also, whatever's most transformative would always be the best. So what we could talk about as best would be, which is great, exactly the next kind of point. What is even most joyful in a human life is that spontaneous act. And I think we know that. There's the joy of when I act according to my expectations and I'm proud of myself, and that might even be the best thing in that moment. Maybe our conditioning is so strong that to act according to my expectations of myself, to not smoke or whatever, might be good. But there's that upper joy in the sense of more head, more about conditioning. And then there's the kind of lower simplicity. The wordless simplicity. That somewhere we love most. That staying true to that, no matter what. No matter what the situations. Then just naturally allows the situations to bring out what's needed. So there's the word interconnectedness or interdependence, and that is another word for vulnerability, sensitivity, care. So the fact of interdependence, inner and outer, the fact that my mood depends on what I ate, depends on my physical sensations, depends on what I'm thinking, and vice versa. The fact that I'm only here because you're here, I wouldn't be here if you weren't here, etc. On all the levels are interdependence. How we don't live without the fact of others. We wouldn't know much about what to eat, much less anything like how to fix a toilet or make a toilet or whatever. Just really on our own. With the fact of interdependence and the fact that every single gesture makes a difference within that not two, not one-ness that we are, that is. It can make interdependence work in such a way that is reinforcing conditioning and pain and unnecessary suffering. Unnecessary poverty. Or very simply, so we don't need to get depressed about it, because then just another gesture from sincerity, from playfulness, lightness, simplicity, not knowing how, and a best guess comes through. That gesture can make all the difference in the world, not only for me, but for my world. Not to underestimate that. We know examples when some small gesture from someone else made all the difference to us. And it wasn't much. It doesn't need to be much. But the timing, the tone, everything. But letting that sensitivity stay seated and rested as care, so that we don't get paranoid, so that we don't get uptight, in the name of lightness, playfulness, care. So we might have an idea of what needs to be transformed, or what is transforming, or what transformative feels like, and best in a situation coming out, a happening, might not feel like that. But maybe it is. Maybe it is in the sense of an enactment of freedom, bringing freedom in, no matter what it looks like, no matter what it feels like, no matter what we think about it. And because we start to be more and more available to feel the joy of that. So it's good in two ways. Best in two ways. Lenny G?
You partially answered my question, but what you said, bringing care to sensitivity. Sometimes.
Or bringing sensitivity to care, etc.
No, and how would you bring sensitivity to care?
Sometimes when sensitivity feels like a trap and we want to escape or get paid for it, what it needs is care. Yeah. So letting it come to care, yeah. Or let care come to it.
With me sometimes, when there is an event, a social event or something, and a sensitivity is touched with me, then the hurt is just so much that I can't think of anything. I can think of running,
yeah,
or avoiding or anything like that, but somehow. And that happens in other areas, I guess, too, is that the emotion or the feeling is so strong that I can't muster the care.
Yeah. So this is where there's sensitivity and there's conditioned response. And where I'm talking about tone in the conditioned heart is, I can't handle the emotion either. I can't muster care, but I can't also handle this intense emotion. And then it could happen that there's like a dropping away of trying to muster care. Muster means like kind of get the army together. I can't muster care, but care is. And it's usually my idea that blocks the caring.
The idea.
the idea that it's not okay to be freaking out in a party. I'm supposed to be having fun or be normal or whatever. And this is maybe just as a meditation teacher, I would say even more important, but let's say it's also important in the whole inner parties, in the whole realm of the inner life, where something is touched and that we want to run away or just ignore it, like pretend that that person that hurt my feelings, probably unknowingly, pretend that person's not here. We do it outside and inside without noticing that we're hurting that person.
Sometimes when that happens.
And ourselves.
Pardon?
We're hurting that person and ourselves.
Yeah.
And so just letting it hurt is sometimes all that's needed to allow care. Care comes rushing.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's what I do when I can't bring the care to it. I just feel it deeply.
And life happens.
Well,
then life happens. And if we stay with the not need to escape, but the joyful interest.
Well, yeah, but it's not.
It's
joyful.
Really, well, it's not joyful to be in pain or to feel hurt, but it is joyful to let life happen, no matter what. And to stay true to what's going to be there in the middle of that and what's going to still be there when that's finished.
I think sometimes when something like that happens, you're in the moment, and you never know what the next moment is going to be. And so sometimes it's maybe nothing, or there's some laughter, or something catches that is that's okay. And then it goes to, I mean, I guess there's a thousand ways to let it go.
Yeah. And so what we're speaking about today is not having the how to deal with it in mind necessarily. We might want to have some options because the conditioning is so strong. We might want to have our set of tools ready, but also being open to some new invention that happens then and never happens again. Which might be that someone tells a joke and it triggers something that allows us to relax and remember that it's still okay. It was actually really okay even then, and it's still okay now. And that's when we start to get the flavor of the simplicity of what we sometimes talk about being in the belly. Being in the belly.
Yes.
So what's important about the inner gesture of leaving room for care to come in, we don't leave room for care to come in. It's not that we have to make care come in. We don't leave room for it to come in. Partly because of our ideas, of our resistance to our own experience. We take our own experience as insult. If I'm freaking out, it's wrong. And so we don't let care come. We ignore that caring is.
Yeah. Well, essentially, caring is loving, isn't it?
Yeah. So we start to less and less ignore our experience that caring does come. Caring does come in when we're not bound to the idea, and we don't give too much space to the conditioned reaction. We don't hate the conditioned reaction. We just start to see that it's not really mine. It happened to be this shape. And when it's this shape, and this happens, then this happens. Ah! And that's all. But if it came to be this shape, it can come to be another shape. And caring is the transformative intelligence. So when we start to be aware that there, even when there's the most intense reaction in a situation, inner or outer situation, there's also so much else going on. And sometimes that helps as a tool. There's a conditioned reaction, but wait, there's also the sunlight on white. Or any direct experience, color, sound, taste, etc. There's the deep wish to be free of suffering and not to escape from, but to be free no matter what, difficult situation, happy situation. The joy of just staying true to that and then experiencing it in real difficult situations, it's so liberating in a kind of relative way. Liberating. It gives so much confidence that we don't need to be so careful about keeping my circumstances manageable so that I can feel okay. Out of caring, I don't force myself into unsafe situations just to test myself. But anything can come that comes. And it doesn't take away caring intelligence. It doesn't take away what is.
Yeah, well, then, sometimes in certain situations, the love that I feel at that moment, the love, the caring, might not have come without that other situation happening.
Exactly.
And then I see this is a win-win situation. Yeah.
So that's what we were saying with Lorna, and also what I mean by this question, am I willing to let life situations free me in ways I didn't expect? The difficult, and there's the other stretch, it's also difficult when to let life be so generous. To let those stretches happen. I like how you say love. So we start to notice something gets hurt, and that seems like all there is and all I am, and yet somewhere there's this nearly imperceptible sense or whatever, ground or whatever, that we were calling okayness in January. And just the little inner gesture to let okayness be okay no matter what. Because sometimes it's like, oh, but if I'm okay with even this horrible situation, then maybe life will take advantage of me or whatever. And it's ourselves that lose. When we stay in touch with all that is, like, the vastness of what is, including that really tense, contracted, I am hurt experience. We feel this and a whole field of openness. Where we have some food for the mind, like, ah, this is not the only perspective. The way I took that person's word is not necessarily true. Even if they meant to hurt me, it's not necessarily about me. And also there is color, sound, etc. Also there's my deep wish to stay true to what is. And to let it bring out a deeper freedom. Even in the worst case. So then we stop, we kind of lose track of like needing to have a perspective. Maybe they meant it personally, maybe they wanted to hurt me. maybe they didn't even notice I was standing there. They were talking to themselves. And we start to get close to where a deep meditative experience that in Buddhism is called neither perception nor non-perception, where that starts to be a live experience, not only in our secret places. We could call it in today's words like neither perspective nor non-perspective, neither view nor non-view. Is there any other words? Well, let's see. I think so, and you can check me.
Okay.
First, when we talk about confidence in what is, so confidence in what you already know beforehand, it's very likely that some emotions will be triggered here and there. You also already know that you cannot know how to respond until you're in that. That when I know how beforehand, I'm getting in my way. The wanting to know how is climbing back up. And if we come down to the belly, that doesn't have many words, or sometimes doesn't have any words, but has a kind of basic confidence that life is not unfriendliness towards me. There's a place where I and life are one thing. And in my experience is this discovering that's enriching all of us. Then you are free in any moment where there's hurt. Just like you are free, and sometimes we're more free in any moment where there's physical hurt, to respond. Sometimes it's clear that there's no action that can help. Sometimes it's clear you just go to the bathroom and lock the door for a while. I'm imagining the party thing. And see what happens. Sometimes the fact that you accept that there's hurt, but that's not all, allows you to see the person who hurt you differently, and there can be some alchemical falling into a different situation. Without leaving the room, without changing the conversation. Completely different realm with the same person. Or you see their hurt, for example. Or you just simply see both of your okayness anyway. Those are examples, but the The fun part is allowing this to be a happening. And with experience, we're more and more responsive, we're more and more light. So that a difficult situation doesn't freak us out. It doesn't make me think, I've done something wrong to deserve this, etc. I have to earn my way out, do some dishwashing or whatever. But the unearned already okayness, the unearned already what is-ness, is more available to the situation through my confidence. To actually more and more know myself kind of upside down, that my intelligence is down here and mysterious and not in a hurry and totally happy to be utter simplicity. We will easily think that it's boring, conventional, too simple, no one will like me, like unattractive. But the authentic staying true to what is joyful okayness, simplicity. And I don't have to create more intelligence or create more creativity. Because I can kind of fall through my cracks into my spaciousness. That's not only mine. And we can fall through our cracks to an intelligence that, where we can even experience the body as so not solid, so much like an image or a mirage in water, that every little ripples through. And that sounds scary and intimidating, but the experience is fun and deep. And we just keep falling through the cracks so that there seems to be nothing left. And anything possible. Does that answer your? So we have time for feeling what is in the hall, walking, being simple human being on the earth. Undescribed. Not getting confidence from our descriptions. Being undescribed and undescribable. May our experience of what is in its joy and simplicity and enoughness spark a revolution of awakening everywhere.